to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey. What happens when you attain your dream and find out it wasn't near as fulfilling as you thought it would be? In fact, it was empty. We're going to explore that today with a guest of mine. They'll join me in just a moment. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you to the God Journey. Before we get to the interview, I want to let those of you know in Kentucky that I'm headed out there next weekend. First time in that state. Never been there before. Been a lot of talk about me coming in various times. So finally, it's come together. I'm going to spend 5 days out there. We got people coming in from different states to join us there as well. This is the second to the last state of these 50 United States that I'll finally be visiting. There's one state left that I've never been to. And I tell you what, I'm going to do, if you want to try and guess which state that is, for the first person to post the correct answer on the blog at thegodjourney.com, I'll tell you what I do. I'm going to send you a copy of one of my latest books, A Man Like No Other. This is a beautiful, full-color, coffee table-type book of paintings from the life of Jesus done by an award-winning artist friend of mine, Murray Whiteman. He asked Brad and I to write some text to go with his pictures. It gave Brad and I a chance to unpack the life of Jesus without all the religious veneer we've put around it and really consider who Jesus was and how he dealt with life as a man discovering that he was God and living among us with that kind of joy. So I'll send a free copy out to the first person who can guess which state of the union I have not been to yet and see if that happens. Well, they actually shut down the whole thing. They dismantled the institution. They sold the building. They're now ending the 501c3, and they're distributing all the assets to nonprofit groups in the area. So, congregation in Clyde, Texas, I was there a couple of years ago in the middle of some of this transition, watching the hunger in their heart and seeing where that was going to lead them. And one of the guys I met when I was there is named Brandon Hawk, former professional tennis player, then a senior pastor, and found all that kind of imploding on him. It sent him on a very different journey, and I wanted to share part of that journey with you today. So I'm going to introduce to you a friend of mine, formerly from Clyde, Texas, now living in Carlsbad, California. And we'll talk more about that in the midst of the interview. Here's my conversation with Brandon Hawk. 2 weeks ago, you moved to California.
I did. I traded my y'alls for dudes.
Dudes, yeah. Oh, you surfing yet? No.
We actually saw a surf contest this weekend at the Carlsbad Beach Fest.
And we, as who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
I do.
You do? Most people don't.
No.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
My wife, Jenny, and
how long have you been married?
I have been married 10 years.
Okay. She's a sweetie. I met both these folks, what, I would say about a year and a half ago or just a little over a year ago?
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I have a boy named Austin, who's 9.
Ah, I have an Austin, who's 2.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And then another son, Connor, who's 7.
Yeah.
And we have a daughter, and she is 4, and her name is Georgia.
Do you have to keep reminding yourselves, or does she do it for you?
She does it for
you. I would think so.
We got the girl. And so now...
And that was the point of having third?
That was the point
trying to get the girl?
Trying to get the girl.
That doesn't usually happen, but...
It did. It happened, and so we're good.
You're good. Well, I met you a couple of years ago, and you guys invited me to come out. I was already in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and you guys said, hey, can you come out and hang with us a little bit in Clyde?
Yes.
And I had a great couple of days, what, 3 days, something like that. It wasn't a long time, but it was fun. You guys were in the middle of a transition.
Yes, to say
the
least.
As a group of people, and now you're in a bit of a transition more individually than you are as a group of people. But
yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, you were you were a former professional tennis player.
Yes.
Had competed at the U.S. Open in Wimbledon, got deep into the semis or quarterfinals. I'm kidding. Didn't get that far, did you?
No, I lost in the second round in doubles in the U.S. Open and lost in the first round.
I know everybody's trying to think Brandon Hawk now, the tennis people. I wouldn't know you if you'd won Wimbledon. I probably wouldn't know your name, but... Yeah, so you're a tennis player, come from a fairly athletic family.
Yes.
Out of Clyde, Texas. And,
yeah.
And you ended up, how'd you get from professional tennis to pastoring a group of people in Clyde?
Well, I've always had a desire to, I guess, inspire people to new perspectives. And after my tennis days, the context, and I grew up in a religious home.
And you had some injuries and things that kind of ended the tennis thing.
I did have some injuries.
How old were you when you kind of?
23, 24.
Okay.
24
all
was
right.
when it was all done. And, yeah, I started leading a college service called Unite. And there were about 300 people that would come to this service, college students, every week. And it
as
was
part of a church or just part of a district-wide thing?
It was a parachurch. It was kind of a unity thing for all the churches in the community, but I
of Clyde or Abilene?
Abilene.
In Abilene.
In
okay.
Abilene, uh-huh. And that led me down a path of becoming a senior pastor.
Had you wanted to be in ministry? I mean, like growing up, I mean, you're a professional athlete, all that. Was ministry in the back of your mind or just kind of fall into that?
I think it was the only context that I knew to inspire people to see life differently.
Okay.
And just from my background, and I'd always had a desire to, you know, if someone would have asked me at an early age, I would have said, I want to be a motivational speaker or, and
that explains a lot.
And so that was really in my family, the pastoring and the spiritual side, even church was really glorified. And so, in an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
And
some of the pro sports was that way, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of unhealthy little things.
Yes.
But when you talk about even at a young age, wanting people to see life differently, what would that – how are they seeing it in a way that you would want to help them reshape that?
Yeah, I think something that I've just grown up in a small town, and it's a poor town, and
– I've been there.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sidewalks.
No, not a lot.
It was a world-class restaurant there, though,
that's
even
right.
though it's closed up, I guess, since.
Yeah, but it you could tell there's just the mindset was very limited and very lacking. And I'd always seen that, and I was not raised from my parents with that mindset. And so I'd always wanted to help people. I've had a heart to help people. And help people transform. And I think I want to help people even now create the world that they really want, not the world that they feel like they have to be obligated to. And I want to help people move from a context of fear, where they're motivated by fear, everything that comes with that context, to being motivated by love. And I think that's what intrigued me to connect with you. Was I felt like that you were banging the drum of love that really resonated with my heart.
Yeah, that's neat. How long ago had you gotten in touch with some of my stuff?
Probably 4 years ago.
Was that part? I mean, you had that. You became
yes.
pastor this group. It's a fairly small group, but was growing.
Yeah,
you know, it was up to 500 and tracking.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened? And when I got there, you weren't even meeting anymore on Sundays.
Yeah.
I recall.
Yeah, we were in a really small town. We had a church of 500. We had people coming from the neighboring town. They were coming to Clyde to come to this church. Hmm. I was kind of the up and coming.
Joel Osteen.
Yeah,
huh?
That's
going down that Joel Osteen track.
Yes.
Okay.
And I felt like I was stopped in my tracks by the lack of connection. We were doing a lot of stuff. And doing a lot of quote unquote good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of programs, meeting services,
a lot of helping the community. But what I saw in our leadership and in myself was just the lack of connection. And when we disagreed from each other, this is what I've noticed, when we disagreed from each other, we disconnected our heart from each other. And when the disagreement became big enough, we separated for good. And I felt like that was a real breakdown in what we were doing. We could do a lot of programs together, but we couldn't stay connected with each other. And
would you look back and say that would impact the effectiveness of the things you were trying to do? I mean, you're doing lots of good things in the community.
For sure.
You stopped doing all that. So
we did.
How good were they if you felt the need to stop them? How do you process that out?
I just felt like that when I talk about connection, there's different ways to connect. And what I saw with our group, we were connecting to each other through our gifts.
Mm-hmm.
We were connecting through mental concepts. But I felt like there was a deeper way to connect.
When a word last night used was purpose.
Purpose,
We had a purpose together.
We had a purpose together. We had a vision together that we were pushing for and accomplishing and going after. But
Was it mostly your vision? Were you kind of a visionary?
I've always been a visionary.
Okay. Uh-huh. So and people were kind of getting behind
they were
you.
Getting.
And what was your passion at that point? What were you hoping that group of people would accomplish before you got sidetracked?
Transformation, you know, community-wide transformation.
Okay.
That we would help bring about a transformative effect within our community.
Which would mean what? People would come to Christ. People would get out of poverty.
All the above.
Okay.
All the above. I believe physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, that they would come to a level of maturity and transformation in all of those areas.
Were you kind of a manipulative leader? Were you leading with a strong authority ethic? Or
I think I definitely think that in my fear, being motivated by fear. For me, I have a tendency to, as someone who's called to inspire, mm-hmm. my fear-based, the way that plays out through fear is manipulation, and for sure, and that it's subtle, but that the manipulation plays out that they will thank me in the end.
That's always the hope. I'm doing this for your own good.
That's right.
C.S. Lewis said there's no worse tyranny than people who are actually tyrannizing us for their own good. He said they'll never stop. The robber baron will eventually get what he wants from you and go away. But those who abuse us for our own good will abuse us forever. Wow.
Well, that's so true because in my mind, the end result and us getting to that end result was more important than how we got there and why we got there. And that was the breakdown in me, and that's what I started to look at in myself that needed to change. And even am looking at myself at this very moment going, okay, how and why is just as important as what? Mm-hmm. And that is very new for me.
We can get to the specifics of the journey in a minute, but this took you to a point of dismantling this whole thing.
Yes.
Even giving the building away, as I said, up front, and giving away. I mean, you're dissolving the 501c3 totally.
Yes.
And you're giving away all the assets and the income because you have to do that.
Yes.
How do you look back at that now? I mean, you could see the broken things of it. Did you think you could reform it and make it more relational without having to disband it? How do you process that today?
That's a great question.
I have great questions. I have 30 of them.
Okay. I think that's what I ask myself. Could it have become more relational?
That's what everybody asks.
Yeah.
People who are in things like that are leading them. They're always going, we can make this more relational.
Yes.
And they really try. In the long run, they find it can't, that, or they don't.
Yeah.
It's a thing that
I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I can't speak for anyone else, but
sure.
For me, I could not be in the position of senior pastor and inside of that structure, that mm-hmm. church structure, I could not connect myself fully to God and to people.
Mm.
And pretty much that's what it came down to. Those people that there at that church, I wanted to do life with them beyond church.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I knew to get there was how Brandon Hawk could get there. The only way that I felt like I could do that was to stop church. And
was that an overnight choice? I mean, like growing 500 people, got this thing, this machine running. Did you come to that conclusion quickly and then just end everything? Or was this a process of discovery?
It was a process of discovery. It was kind of like the
over a 2-year, 4-year period?
Yeah, about a 2-year period.
Okay.
And it was like that the seed of love became very violent in a – that's maybe not the best word.
I've heard people use the word subversive with love. And I think love is very subversive to human conventions.
Yes.
You really choose between human systems at some point or a love and affection because they're not compatible.
I've never heard
violent love, but I understand what you're saying. It's powerful.
I did a series at the church called The Love War. And the power of the cross is you know, the power of the cross is greater than the power of the sword. And I went after...
Boy, I wish we believed that.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. Because I think that's how Jesus lived.
Yes.
But boy, we even, I mean, they got 2,000 years of Christian history. We're always picking up the sword. We're
That's
always going to do it the way everybody else does, business, military.
That's right.
And then we always end up with something, like you said, it's not relational. It's
no.
We're relational if we're on a purpose or on a task together. But beyond that, it's not.
We were good as a team when we had a purpose or a task and being very – we're Texans, so we were hospitable. We're nice people. We were good at that. We were good at being hospitable. We were good at even connecting with people that wanted to be a part of our vision.
Yeah.
And we were good at, in quote unquote, inspiring people to our vision.
Yeah.
And
I like the air quotes around inspire. You can't see those on the podcast, but there are air quotes around that inspire. That goes back to manipulation.
It does, exactly. And so, but I really wanted to connect to these people beyond what we did. I wanted them to know me. Warts and all, and I wanted to know them. And
did they want to know you?
Some did.
Yeah.
There's about 70 of us that are still really just connected at a relational level, and where we are, you know, I think that's the tension for me is to present, even just in everyday life, to present to people where I want to be rather than where I am at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what I made a commitment and even it's still a choice every moment to give people where I am at this very moment, immaturity and all.
Mm.
In the position of senior leader or senior pastor, I did not feel like from that position I could give people where I was today at that very moment.
Mm.
And
that they'd be okay with the process.
That's
you
right.
Undergo.
That's right. It's a position of perfection. And
that's why I love the word journey, because journey is it's okay to be where I'm at today. I've got flaws. I've got stuff God's done in me. And if you want to know that, we can have a real relationship.
That's right.
If you need me on a pedestal to be something other than I am so that you're disappointed when I don't meet an expectation you have, then you don't really want to know me inside my journey. You want me to be on a pedestal for you. And you, I think this the whole senior pastor environment, it begs for that. And I think some guys like it, but I think most senior pastors really do hate it.
Yeah.
And resent it.
That's right.
But they play the game.
I did. And it aligned to a lifestyle that I had lived from my tennis days, which was to be the one that gives people direction, to look like I have a lot of direction in my life. I was in this ivory tower that was kind of above. But what it did, Wayne, is it kept me alone. And
talk about that, because this was not for you, at least as what little I know of you. We've only had a couple of times together. We've talked quite a bit on the phone. I mean, we've had some communication over the years. But even more than a corporate adventure, this has been a personal journey for you.
It has.
A deep one.
It has.
Talk about
that. Well, I had a dream as a little boy to play in Wimbledon. And long story short, I accomplished that dream. And I played doubles in Wimbledon. And we lost 10-8 in the fifth set, and it was a last match of the day, and it should have been the greatest moment of my life because it's what I dreamed as a 10-year-old watching Stefan Edberg and Boris Becker play in the Wimbledon final. I'd seen it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to accomplish it. I accomplished it, and I go back to my flat, go back to the house there in the village, and I'd never felt so alone.
Wow.
It was like all – nobody that I wanted to be there was there.
Hmm.
I had just accomplished something great. I wasn't connected to myself. I wasn't connected to God. I wasn't connected to the people I loved the most.
Yeah. Had someone been there, do you think it'd be different?
I don't know.
Or do you think you still would have felt? Because you talk about being disconnected from yourself, which
yes.
Even if you've got people around, they're just masking
yes.
that.
I think that was one of the biggest things was I had lost my way, that it had become about Brandon in a how I could get my value through my performance.
And that fits right into the whole be the leader of a ministry
that's right.
model.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And that.
So when did that come apart for you?
When I did the Love War series is when I started.
What brought you to do that?
What brought me to do that?
Yeah, I mean, what kind of was stirring in your heart that led to you actually Or do you just do you learn things when you teach them? Wow, I've never said that before. That's good.
I think so.
I do sometimes that, but
yeah. I think so. And I had been on this for the last 6 or 7 years up to that point. I had been on a journey of dealing with my disconnection and my aloneness, my lack of value, lack of love for myself, all of those things. And so that had taken me on a journey of reading books like, you know, just some of your stuff, Wayne, and How He Loves Us, and even looking at your website. And
I know when I was there a couple of years ago, I shared a story about my daughter and I.
Yes.
That undid you.
Yes.
I mean, it ruined your night's sleep, as
yes.
I recall.
Sure.
You were talking about the next day. It just, you really didn't feel like you had a relationship with God that reflected that kind of thing?
I think that...
Is that what it was?
I think my pursuit has been about unconditional love. It's been very... love to me has been really based upon... Love and connection have been based upon what I do.
Performance.
Yes. And when I do well, I get love and connection.
Wow.
And when I do well, I get value. And so that makes a little boy want to do well a lot.
Well, isn't that the human world?
It is the human world.
I mean, we're taught that from very young ages,
yes.
Whether it's our parents or being in school, achieving well, or athletics. It's,
that's right.
It's hyperized in athletics for sure.
Yes. And that fit right in with church and being a pastor.
Yeah.
Was, man, he surely has it together, and he's the one teaching us these great insights. So, man, pat on the back and value through performance. And
so what's stirring in you is there's got to be a way I'm loved better than I'm wired.
That's right.
Is that what it was?
That's right, yes. And
how did God begin to get into that place in your heart?
I think it started through the seeds of the books that I was reading,
yeah.
And the new perspective that I was getting that, man, maybe I can be loved
outside
of my what I do.
Yeah.
Can this really be?
Yeah.
And if so, God, like, show me. And I'll never forget, I was at we have a prayer house at, and I would go to the prayer house to prepare my sermons. And this is going to be really vulnerable. It's kind of funny, but
okay.
I would, I would, go there to prepare my sermons, but I would park outside of the prayer house so that people would see that I was there praying and being spiritual.
Yeah.
But really, I was accomplishing and getting ready for Sunday so that they would then also think I was double spiritual because of what I was bringing to them.
Pray well, teach well.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And the car's out front, so everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
That's
and
great.
So this epiphany happened right as I'm about to get out of the car. And I just started laughing and could not stop laughing because of how funny it was that I was about to walk in there and do what I was about to do so that people would think I was spiritual.
That's good.
And
doing a yuck factor on yourself.
Oh, it was
yuck meter.
It was total,
wow.
A little bit of throw up in your mouth
oh,
moment.
Yeah. Got to gag it down.
And it was a great moment though, because that was the first time that I felt God and I could laugh at it.
Good.
And it wasn't like he looked at me and said, well, now you need to go fast.
See how disgusting you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like, man, I'm sitting in my car and it's me and God just laughing about how crazy it is. And I felt like he said, just go inside. Go inside and I'll meet you there. And even if you are wanting to put that sermon together, like, go ahead. And I just felt this like, God was okay with me, even in my junk. And I literally had never felt that.
Yeah, I love that.
And to have a laugh, a belly laugh with God the Father was very healing. And it's taken me on a journey of not taking myself so seriously. And even some of my inconsistencies and insecurities and dysfunctions that, man, me and God can laugh at it. And in that freedom and in that joy, there's way more healing than in the condemnation. And
absolutely.
That's what I saw. And I feel like that was a huge part of that. And
so is that freed up in you? Why did that draw you away from then, I could be a better pastor
yeah.
with this in mind? I mean, that would be what most people would assume. I know the answer to that. I'm just kind of curious how that played out for you.
And I, for me, I don't want to bash the church. Like I think the church can serve a purpose. And but for me, it was not who I was supposed to be a senior pastor of a local church.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
So you got more in touch with yourself.
Yes.
You just didn't fit there anymore.
I did not fit. And I didn't fit in... That structure is just not where I'm called to play. I'm not called to play in that structure.
But you got 500 people who are there because you're the man,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you got a family who's there.
Yes.
Who's excited. So are they taking this news with excitement that you're saying, I don't think I'm going to fit here anymore?
Well, I think that was... Some took it okay. There was a lot of misunderstanding. And to get back to the question you asked about the process, some of the best thing for me was the rejection. Because what I have found out about myself is I have really – my whole life has been formed in a way so that people think I'm something. And what people think about me has really ruled my life. And that rejection of the people closest to me, friends, family, community, to not be the next guy, guru, Joel Osteen, you know, not just to not be that anymore was very, very good for me because I had for the first time, I had to really get my value from God. And I had to learn to value myself beyond what I did. And, you know, church, the church structure, how well you are doing is determined by numbers and tithes and offering.
Yeah.
And all of that was shrinking every day. So I really had to know I was valuable outside of how that system determines value. And that was...
This is the part of the journey no one loves, whether they're a pastor or just a parishioner.
Right.
When they begin to step out and the disapproving glances and knowing people think, I've gone down a bad road and I'm going to be, we read a quote from Rick Warren a couple weeks ago about the step away from church is the step into sin and law. And people feel that. People trigger that. And people write me oftentimes with the pain of that moment. I like that you're celebrating that pain. I want people to really see that. Man, the best thing that happens to you when you step away from religious performance is the fact that you don't take your identity anymore from what other people think of you. And that's the greatest freedom that God won in my life. I lived for other people's approval. And when God got me out of that to where it's not even an aquarium I swim in anymore. I don't think about who approves me. I'm not wounded when somebody ends up hating my guts over something or saying some negative thing about me. It's like your perception of me doesn't define me. And it's not that I can't listen to criticism and try to own what I need to own because I'm still a brother in process. But that's different than living for other people's approval. For sure.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm right in the middle of it. I'm not I can see and have some experiences in another aquarium, and I can see and feel and have experiences in that old aquarium of approval of man is where my value comes from, and so I feel like I'm where I'm at today feels like right in the middle of that journeying towards the aquarium of really getting my approval from approving of myself and getting my approval from God.
Yeah, and eventually you're going to need an aquarium. That's the big
thing.
You know, the aquarium is not the place to be. It's just living in the freedom of who God's made us to be and swimming in the ocean of love that is so much greater than us. And I don't have to be flawless today. I'm a brother on a journey. You get to see the good and bad of it. And it just rolls on to let him be celebrated, not what I'm doing or how I'm doing it.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's, to me... I mean, I'm on nearly twice your age. I look back and go, my gosh, when I was your age, I was deeply embedded in things that God didn't begin to unscrew until I was in my 40s. So, but I had that passion all along. I had that passion. I really want to be somebody who knows God and lives like Christ lived in the world. And
I just
saw those structures that I was a part of weren't taking me closer to that, though they promised to. They were actually drawing me away because they were feeding that approval need and they were feeding my... love to be up front and have people bask in the glow of my anointing or whatever. And it just, it seems so right when you're in the middle of it. And boy, when you talk about it looking back, you go, the yuck factors.
I think you've said this before, the mutual accommodation of self-need.
Yeah, it's a Dave Coleman statement.
And that is a beautiful picture. I needed to lead people. Mm. And a lot of people needed me to lead them. Yeah. And if the tension was, if I was going to get to know people and they were going to get to know me, I had to step down from that place of being the directional guy. And I had to move into a realm of connection that was beyond my gift, and which is heart to heart.
Yeah. And moving on to this performance thing, you were sharing a little bit last night. I don't know how much you want to share on here, but really fed back into your whole family, your extended family, brothers and sisters, the whole professional athlete. You guys were in business together with a financial company or whatever.
Yeah.
Any more you want to say about it? I mean, really, everyone in your family has kind of been on a bit of a journey to move from this performance base to...
Yeah, this has hit our whole family. And we were all athletes, college scholarship, state champions, professional tennis players.
Parents pushing you that way?
Parents pushing us towards that.
Success at an athletic level and then a business level.
That's right. And we were in business together and...
Very successful.
Very successful. Yeah. And even if we weren't successful, the way we presented ourselves was very successful.
Mm.
And...
The image?
The image was successful. And what we... You know, I really want to applaud my parents because they took a huge risk with their business to say, hey, we want more than just slaves here at our business. We want y'all to really know what it's like to be – you know, we hear that slave son language. But I got to watch my parents really go from – we felt enslaved to the company to really now, you know, they went after our hearts and – I feel like a son, and my dad feels very relevant to me now and 3 years ago, beyond what he could do. Let's just be honest, beyond money, he wasn't very relevant to me.
Wow.
And now he is very, very relevant, even to a place I can say this, he's one of my heroes, that he would take such a brave jump. You're talking about a West Texas bull rider who owns a manufacturing and construction company that is not conducive to heart-to-heart connection.
But he's learning.
He's learning, he's connecting to his kid's heart, and he is connecting to his own heart, and it is a beautiful, beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, you were even saying at one point that the change in this for your family, there was, while you were even still pastoring a little bit, there was this talk of no longer being obligated to religious things for the other siblings. And that was a little bit of that kind of some impact on you.
For sure. I mean, my whole family we all went to the same church. I was the lead pastor. My dad was an elder. And, we all served in certain ways.
And so the family's discovering we're stepping away from obligated, purpose-driven relationships. But that was even threatening still because you were still there.
Yeah, for sure it was. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Even though we told people to go home, we sent people home and said, hey, if you're doing this out of obligation, if you're giving out of obligation, if your family isn't right, but you're still – if church is more important than your family, you've got things backwards.
Yeah.
And – we were sending people home, but still, it affected me because it was my family.
And it's one thing to say that. We don't want you to do anything out of obligation, but we want you to keep doing the things you've been doing. Just don't do it with obligation anymore.
That's right.
But you can't find that out until you walk away from obligation and really find out what is in your heart do. And I find people who've gone on this journey a bit, and this is I get yelled at from some of the more structured people who say, you know, some of these people, they get away from the structure and there's nothing there. And I say, isn't it valuable for them to find that out? And they look at me like I'm out of my mind. No, it was better for them to keep coming and pretending to be part of something out of obligation. Where I'm at is, no, it's better to wander a little bit, find out where you really do feel empty and what you are hungry for and where your heart is going to turn back to God or if it's not, rather than keep playing the pretense game where you never get to figure that out.
I think that was the biggest thing for me was maybe even a condemnation point that other leaders used against me was, what about all the sheep?
Yeah.
you're not being a good shepherd. They're all wandering and astray. And I have felt the same way, that I feel like it's good for them to wander. Mm-hmm. And if they, there's plenty of church, we're in the Bible Belt. There's plenty of churches they can plug into if they need to. But the wandering isn't a bad thing. And I learned a lot. I needed to wander. I needed to find some things out on my own and like really find out who is God to me.
Yeah. And that's who the shepherd really is. I mean, the idea that I am a shepherd of these sheep and I'm supposed to keep them contained and on purpose, on task, doesn't allow him to say, no, there's one shepherd of the sheep.
Yes.
And he wants them to learn to listen to his voice, be drawn into his life. And I do think when we set humans up as a substitute for that, people can be in that environment for a long time and never get to know who God is, because they're meeting the expectations and they pat themselves on the back because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I feel good about meeting my obligations. I met a young guy in 1920 recently who was talking about, I love obligation. I love knowing I meet that better than people around me. Yes. Is there something wrong with that? And I'm going, dude, you're wired in ways you have. He asked me it publicly, so I didn't like want to totally strip him naked in front of the group, but I just said, man, you're in a scary place. Because that's where I was at 21. I could keep the obligations, and I felt I was better than other. I got a big hit from keeping it, but it was a flesh hit, not a spiritual hit.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of false responsibility comes with. For me, it came with being a leader, and I've learned that a leader of a church. And what I've learned is, I've lived with a lot of false responsibility most of my life for people.
Yeah.
That.
It belongs to God.
That's not that I am coming to this realization. You know, me dealing with Brandon is hard. I mean, it's hard enough, but to have to deal with, you know, trying to control or keep 500 people in a certain pen, that is just not the game I want to play.
And you have to inspire them constantly, air quotes.
Yes, yeah. Well, air quotes.
Air
that's
quotes,
right.
Yeah. You have to manipulate them.
Manipulate,
I
mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. I think that people don't see that conformity to a system takes an awful lot of manipulation and leaves people at the end of it lifeless.
Yes.
Even the ones that go along well, they're like zombies. Yes. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Inside, they're wondering, why isn't this more alive? I thought it would be. And I think I'm probably the only one here who feels that way.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that everyone feels that way.
Yeah.
But if you talk about it, then you're admitting something's wrong. And
that's right.
That'll marginalize you, because we don't admit that here.
Yeah. I don't want to either. Like, I guess my feeling right now is I don't want to demonize the church in any way, that I just want people to know I couldn't do it. I couldn't go through the process I needed to go through and still be a senior pastor of a church.
Yeah.
And I guess that's...
And I don't think that's demonizing, quote unquote. I'd never demonize the church, because the church is the expression of God's family in the earth.
Yes.
But human systems that have tried to replicate that are flawed at the root.
Yeah.
And I don't mind. Can God do good things in and around it? Yes, he can. But we've seen time and time again, when you give yourself to human systems as a way to accomplish God's kingdom in the world, it disfigures you and the kingdom. And I don't mind being very honest about that. Now, to me, that's not dissing on the church, because the church is God's people finding expression in the earth. And they're not in human systems.
Yeah.
Maybe around them, maybe in spite of them, God does things. I'm okay. I'm really good with that.
Yeah.
But to go back and say, these human systems of management, managing people, is a flawed approach. And we've got 2,000 years of history to validate that. That doesn't even, you don't have to say, well, it's just our generation. No, we have 2,000 years.
Yeah.
We got the Galatian church, for Pete's sakes, the Colossian church, who started in this freedom as loved sons and then became twisted into performers.
Yes.
So already they're being warned. How did you get there?
Yes.
And I love seeing people freed from that.
Yeah. I think that was the realization for me. I was the biggest performer.
Yeah.
And performed for value.
And could do it well.
And could. I was good at it.
But left you empty.
But it left me alone.
Yeah.
And I was tired of being alone. And I want to really know people, and I want them to know me. It's scary because of the maybe just the exposure, but it is worth it.
We've only got a couple minutes left, and part of this journey for you is not just you're going on a spiritual journey and learning things about yourself. It's costing you your vocation. It's costing you what you would tag your success in life wagon to, whatever.
Yeah.
So you've let go of all that.
I have.
And I know, and we've had lots of people on the podcast that have. It's a great journey. That's what I loved about it when I was with you, even though at the time you guys still had lots of vision and plans for schools, and there were lots of things you guys were going to do that's kind of...
Yes.
So, I mean, God was still unpacking things when I was with you.
And still is.
And I had a lovely car ride to the airport where four guys are just convincing me how permanent this relationship is going to be.
Yeah.
If it is, it will be. God will kind of do that. But that's if right. we make it permanent and it's not, now we're going to be wired to each other in a pretty dangerous way.
Yes.
So what brings you to California? You're taking a different vocational trajectory now.
I am. I've just started back with the basics with me in... My initial desire is to inspire people to a new perspective, and I feel something that feels important to me is to give within capacity and not to give beyond my capacity. Mm-hmm. And what I feel like in this season I have a capacity for is to inspire people and to see through the context of love. And I do that now through trainings that I put on called U Trainings. And these are, just a place for me to inspire people to see in a new context. And
this is consulting and
coaching.
And it's
coaching.
Kind of a higher end deal.
It is.
This isn't cheap.
No, it's not. It's not, but it is.
And it's secular based. You're not really,
yes.
The faith component is something you're encouraging in people.
It
but
is.
It's not a really, you're pushing the kingdom through this arrangement.
You know what's funny? I had... You're exactly right. But I was with two very influential people, and we were in a high-rise building that they live in. And I was in this coaching session. I felt an impression from the Holy Spirit to just say, hey, let's invite him. Let's go for it. Let's connect to God in a spiritual way with guys that were not Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And we invited the Holy Spirit. And I had one of the greatest encounters with God and his affection that we'd ever had. So it was cool to see that I am in a business type setting,
right?
And my vehicle is business, but the Holy Spirit still showed up.
And I wish people would learn. I don't care if you're an architect, if you're a construction guy and you can't figure out how to get this wall to fit right.
Yes.
Holy Spirit wants to be involved in all of our lives.
Yes.
It's not just if you're in ministry, then you get the Holy Spirit to help you with stuff. So I like that.
Yeah.
What
I help people do is I help them if they're looking to a lot of these guys I work with, they've had great success in business or they've had great success in professional athletics. But they still feel alone and disconnected from the things that matter to them most. I help them on that process.
Learn to live
connected.
To love themselves.
Learn.
And then to be able to love people around them
in
a healthy way.
And that's what
do. So it's kind of a motivation. You're back to that motivational speaking thing, and that's where the next bit of your journey is going to be.
It really is. It's kind of where I'm at. It's the place where I am, and I'm really, really excited about it.
So. Well, I'm excited you came down to spend a couple of days with Sarah and I and have a chance to catch up a bit and see what God has in store for us down the road. So.
Wayne, thank you. I want to say this, too, to everyone about Wayne.
Uh-oh.
I want to really thank him publicly for...
I'd edit this out for sure.
The seeds that he has planted in my life as far as living loved has redirected me, and it has brought a family that was very performance-based and very purpose-based. Now we are connected at a heart level. And, you know, that means more to me than anything. And so I just want to thank you, Wayne, for that.
Welcome. That's
thank
very
you
sweet.
So much.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.